Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Fort Keist LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. My guest today is Jord Cooper. Welcome, Jord. So great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to chat with you because we have a bunch of things to talk about. I'd like to talk about where you are in the world. I think that's interesting. We're going to talk about your career and that journey and things that impacted you on that journey. And we're going to talk about your current role. But I'm really interested in talking about that resilience topic that you came up with, which is talking about resilience versus willpower. And I think that's such a great topic. And I expect to learn quite a bit from you today. So let's start with where we are. So you know I'm in London, Canada. And where are you?
I'm currently in Pererenan, based in Bali, in Indonesia.
Okay. And how long have you lived in Bali?
This is my third year in Bali. Yeah, I just crossed the threshold of 3 years. Yeah.
Okay. I have a question about Bali. Why? And I know it's a beautiful place, so probably your temperature there is warmer than my temperature here. So we're around minus 6 Celsius right now. What do you think you might be?
Well, we're 30 degrees most of the time.
Most of the time, yes. So
yeah, it's early morning now, so maybe it's 27, but
yeah. I think that's the other interesting thing to say, that I've worked a whole day. And you haven't started your day, have you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I experience a lot. I work with my clients from all over the world. And sometimes I'm working with my clients from Australia that are like a couple of hours ahead of me. And then I jump on a call with someone who's like in the US or whatsoever. So it's super strange always to speak to people that sometimes are a day ahead or back in time.
For you, it's tomorrow. And for me, it's last night.
Yeah.
Here's my other question about Bali, which is beautiful. We're all aware of that. Why do people go to Bali to find themselves, Jord?
Oh, that's such a good question. Well, I can start with myself. The first time I went to Bali was basically to work together with a coach. And when I arrived there, I was so inspired by his lifestyle because he was doing really well for himself. And at the same time, I saw that like that kind of work-life balance, and I don't actually like speaking of that term, but it's like he was really thriving in his business, and at the same time, living such a healthy and vibrant life, having time to go to the beach. Like it was just normal to end the day on the beach with a coconut and a few friends. It was just normal to in the morning to wake up and to go for a paddle, to go for a surf. And I was like, whoa, that is quite new to me. And I remember one of the questions that he asked me is probably one of the best questions he ever asked me, at least one that had most impact on me, is when we were surfing. And I had such a big smile on my face. And he was like, what is it that you do at home that gives you such a big smile on your face? And that was so confronting because I could not answer that question. So for me, I was truly inspired by his lifestyle. And I was like, when after my breakdown, I always said I want to move to Cape Town. That's where my heart is. But I needed to recover for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I didn't even decide. It was just the most logic thing for me to go to Bali.
Okay.
Because it's such a beautiful, loving place. The people are so warm and loving, and it's so super convenient. And I think that there's also a practical aspect for people that are on their journey of self-discovery or self-healing, whatever they call it. often they give up a certain lifestyle. They give up their jobs. And living in Bali is just not as expensive as living in Cape Town or anywhere else in the world. Like, I would love to go to California and do the same, but I would probably need like 10 times the money.
Yep.
So there's also a practical aspect.
Yes.
And for the people that believe in energy, Bali and its culture has just a very, very special energy. And that is something I can say goodbye to everything from this lifestyle. I'm actually at this point, I am considering moving back to Europe next year somewhere. But the only thing that makes it really hard is the local people.
So where are you actually from originally, George?
I'm from the Netherlands, from Amsterdam.
Okay. And where else have you lived in the world?
I have lived in London during my 20s. I've lived in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And I've spent quite some time in South Africa and Cape Town.
So why don't we start talking a little bit about your career journey? Because I know you've had interesting times and very challenging times. So tell me a bit about your initial plans and what you were doing for a living.
I think it goes way back actually to childhood, starting there. My dad always says, like, you were just born with this like innate drive. Like, you could walk before everyone could walk. And I like to believe that that is true. And at the same time, I think a few things happened in my childhood and growing up in a certain society that praised me for performance. And I wasn't as good in school as I wanted to be and as accepted. But I was really good at playing hockey. And in the Netherlands, it's field hockey because we don't have much ice. It's one of the popular sports next to football. And I became really good at playing field hockey. So at a very young age, I just learned to believe, hey, when I'm the best, people like me.
Okay.
Like, coaches like me, people like me. My parents love me anyways more. And I took that on in my life, in my studies, and eventually in my career. And after my studies, I had a few different careers from into sales, eventually into advertising, a really cool job. Learned a lot. And during that job, we worked a lot with the bigger companies, with the bigger airline and telecom companies in the Netherlands and actually in Europe. And that's when we started, there was a transition from like creative advertising to data-driven creative advertising, like to customer segmentation. And we were doing all these very interesting things. And I thought it was so amazing. And I saw the results and I was like, why is that not possible for small, medium-sized retail companies? And that's how I came up with the idea for my previous company, for Fenley. I was 23 when I started working on the business plan, which was basically a universal platform for small, medium-sized enterprises to run their digital loyalty. A loyalty platform where the consumers had a mobile app and they had their dashboard with all the data from the customers in it. Mm-hmm. Which did quite well. It was definitely a very tough journey. It was not that like what people like to believe about startups, that they just pop up and that it starts growing. I started on my own, and eventually we grew a team pretty big. I grew a team pretty big, raised investments, got partners on board. And it was a beautiful journey, but a very tough journey. And one of the things that that made it really tough is that basically when I raised my first investment, which was even before we launched the product because we needed the money to build the product, is that my best friend crossed over. He died in a car accident, and I still remember the feeling of like, they may have taken your life, but it will not take my life. There was this strong feeling of, I will fight through this. And I even remember, it was just that whole mindset that I call it the hero energy, the belief that I am stronger than anything. And I also remember that was a big step for me, going to therapy, because I I was suffering from it, of course. And
yes,
the first day I showed up in therapy, I said to the therapist, like, I'm here to get some guidance through the grief process that I basically want to finish in the next 2 to 3 months.
Finish what?
Like, I wanted to finish. I just wanted to walk through it in like 2 to 3 months. I thought I could control it, like with everything that I did.
You were the kind of driven person that thought that you could put that in a time box.
Yeah, it's I call it in the shadow psychology, where you have the archetypes, and the archetype, the final archetype of the boy psychology that we're in is the hero archetype. And the hero archetype or the hero energy, it's beautiful to be in, because it's about exploring your limits. It's about doing these amazing things. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, we have to come to the realization that we're not stronger than the outside world.
Yes.
And in tribes and stuff, they have the, like in the more ancient livings, they had initiations to get boys to manhood, which were always like these brutal initiations where they had to go through a certain suffering
right.
in order to become a man. But we don't have that in our today's society anymore. So a lot of people have to go through their own sort of initiation, which is often, walking themselves into a wall.
How old were you at this point?
I was 24, 25 when my best friend passed away. I just turned 25, and it basically initiated that energy in me of like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to be stronger than this. And even deeper down, like, there was the need for a safe environment. There was the need for love and for acceptance and for belonging, so I could grieve. But deep down, there was a lack in me, because something told me that I needed to perform in order to earn that love, that acceptance, that belonging. So I was always on my way to the next thing, which was a great driver. I had an innate drive to create an amazing product and enrich the lives of both these entrepreneurs and the customers. But there was also the drive of, I need to be successful, because I must fill my own cup.
Can I just ask you a question? You mentioned that at some point in there, you had some sort of breakdown. Where is that in the continuum?
That was at the age of 28.
Okay.
Yeah. That was basically when I'd been pushing for such a long time, and I noticed that things were off. Like, I noticed that I was too stressed, that my decisions weren't as good anymore. That I was very agitated all the time. And there was a lot of conflict in the companies between my partner and we had too many investors on board. I was just trying to manage everything. And I just felt that I was losing my power. I was losing the drive to get it done. And I was holding on. And until the 15th of September in that year, I don't even know what year it was, but on my birthday, actually, I was in Barcelona, and I was in a restaurant and with a few friends, and we wanted to make a toast. It was the first wine of the day, and I started to see these black dots, and I couldn't make sense who was talking anymore. And those were the first signs that I had blood poisoning. I made it on the plane back home, and from there on I went straight into ICU and spent a couple of weeks in quarantine in the hospital. And in those weeks I made the transition. I basically had to say goodbye to my old life, and that was my initiation. That's where my body gave up. And that's where I learned the difference between willpower and resilience, because I hadn't been resilient at all. I'd been holding on to my willpower.
Okay. So did you decide to not be an entrepreneur anymore at that point? or did you decide to switch your entrepreneurial focus?
Well, at that point, it was just clear to me that I had to change my life radically. Like, and there was not even an option to go back, because I had to step down as the CEO of my company.
Okay.
It was in the shareholder agreement that when you're sick for X amounts of months or longer, you have to offer your shares to the company. And in that process, when that happened, kind of a, well, maybe too much in depth, but like, yeah, people started to try and get my shares. And when that happened, I was like, I don't want to be part of this anymore. And that's when I made the decision to step down and, to sell my shares and to not be part of it anymore. And I had a few options. Like, I had to recover, first of all, for a couple of months. And then, like, new options were popping up, opportunities. But I didn't feel the calling. I felt the calling that I needed to go away and distance myself from, at that point, what I was saying, the system that made me sick. I knew it was me, but I didn't know what it was inside of me that made me sick. Obviously, it was a blood poisoning, but I always say I was my own blood poisoning.
Yeah.
Because it was of my own destructive patterns, the way I was living my life, the way I was leading my company, that made me sick.
Yeah.
So that was my that was the point that I decided, hey, I'm going to go to Bali just to distance myself for a little while. And I never made the decision to really live in Bali. And here I am 3 years later.
Okay. So I can see how the circle comes back to that smile that you had when you were surfing.
Yeah.
You found yourself again.
Yeah. I first started with the journey of self-discovery, both on myself, working with coaches, doing certain courses, trying to find the answers. I wanted to know what it was in me that separated me from being my true self, or actually that created this self-destructive identity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to understand that. And it wasn't easy to find those answers, actually. Every time I thought I had the answer, and I'm like, no, it's deeper than that. And that's eventually how I got into developmental psychology, and really studying the roots of our being.
Interesting. You're a specialist in psychology of leadership and self-actualization. So that means that you are a coach working with what type of clients?
I work with many with entrepreneurs and other influential individuals. They can be executives, they can be top models, they can be well-known influencers. But these, I work with people that I say that have walked up the first mountain over and over again. And with the first mountain, I think David Brook, he wrote a beautiful book, The Second Mountain it's called. And we keep walking that first mountain over and over again. And every time we reach a little bit, we go a little bit higher, and eventually we're at the top. And some people get blown off by a certain event in their lives, like me. And other people just come to the realization that the strategies that they're operating on, that the life that they've created and the way they lead their business isn't serving them anymore. It's separating them from that next level that they're actually seeking for, and often for that deeper level in their business, like for that sense of fulfillment.
Yeah. And how long do you typically work with a client to help them through these stages, Jordan?
It's a minimum. My program is 12 weeks, but that's the bare minimum that I work with my clients. And for them, it sometimes it feels like a lot to jump on a program that's 12 weeks. It's a big investment in time and money. But once they're on it, once they start like unpacking these things, and you give them I don't give them back, they reclaim their own power through their awareness, through their developing the capacity to move forward and from a place of authenticity and wholeness, I would say. Yeah, things start opening for them. And then like sometimes I start working with them in their business, and then they want to expand it to their lives or to their relationships.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's 3 months, other times it's 9 months. Yeah.
And how, this is a good question for you. How do I know when I'm self-actualized?
Good question. It's often the feeling of feeling centered and calm and truly fulfilled. I think self-actualized people, they know that self-actualization is a process that naturally occurs when you live in harmony with the things that are important to you and the things that are essential to you. So in my work, I often refer to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And what I often see is people that come in with all these, yeah, I want to experience more purpose. I want to create a bigger future. I want to create a 7-figure business. That's the story that they tell. What they're actually looking for first is to meet their basic psychological needs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That it's because they're still living from a place of lack, from the fear of not being, not doing, or not having enough. So, and not having enough could be stemming from a childhood living in scarcity where there was not enough money. And that fear is still inside. So no matter how much money they have, it always needs to be more. Yeah. It could be of not being enough, maybe growing up in a household or an environment where your self-worth was challenged by your parents, by teachers, by your peers. And there's still that lack. You've learned that you need to do something in order to be worthy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So those people will always be looking to be more.
Yeah.
And another beautiful one that I often see is the people that are seeking more power. This is often stems back to feeling helpless and powerless. So it stems back to childhood where they have been overpowered and or even abused in whatever sort of way.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept in terms of people that have reached a certain level of achievement in their careers, and they expected that was going to be the thing.
Yes, and that's the promise, right?
Yes.
It's a promise that we grow up with, and it's even the movies that we watch, it's everything that we do. It's just like it's installing that belief that once we have that home, that everything is like calm and cozy, or once we have that car, that we finally feel respect, that we're finally important and respected, and that we can attract the love of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere in our society. And I'm not saying that our society is bad, but it requires us to be aware of it and to have the capacity to deal with it.
Yes, from the inside out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't know what you want or what's important to you, you're constantly seeking it outside of yourself.
Yeah. And this sort of makes me think of going to Bali to find yourself and think that you're going to find yourself there when you actually just took you with you.
Exactly. It's I call it the freedom from syndrome. And there are a lot of people here that are just escaping. They think they're free, but they're still running away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What? Tell me about freedom from. What does that mean?
Freedom from means, so if we look at the spectrum, it's like a lot of people that have lived in the young energy for a long time. So the extreme performance, burning themselves out, and they're frustrated, they're angry at the system, and they don't want to do that anymore. They go to Bali and they go to the full, to the yin side. And for some people, it means like going like fully spiritual. And as much as I encourage spirituality, I don't encourage avoiding the world that we live in. And it's about finding that middle ground. And what I see here a lot is getting the freedom from what's there, because they're still running away from it because they don't have the awareness, but mainly they don't have the capacity themselves to live in that world without being sucked into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on to your comments about resilience versus willpower. I thought that was really interesting, in particular because this program is about career resilience and tips and techniques to help all of us in our working lives, well, in life in general, because our working life is so over into everything we do. It's our identity. So I wondered about what your thoughts are there in terms of trying to cope with sort of being in balance in that working world and willpower and career resilience.
Yeah. Well, based obviously on my own story, it's very clear that I didn't get the meaning of resilience. Like I thought I was resilient, but what I was actually doing, I was holding on to willpower. And it's something that I see showing up in my clients a lot as well. It's and where people think that they're resilient, they're actually not, because how I define resilience is it's well, part of it is the vulnerability to be wrong.
Vulnerability to be wrong.
Yeah. To acknowledge that you are not right, that something is not going right. And also the capacity to ask for help. It's humility. That's such a big part of resilience. And what I see is with a lot of people in their careers is that they keep pushing through. And I don't see pushing through as resilient. That is willpower. And what you see is when people do that, they start depleting their willpower. Willpower is like a muscle. So at some point in our careers, we start to become weaker. And the point of resilience is to become stronger. So whenever people become weaker because of their resilience, it's not resilience, it's willpower. Okay. And whenever we use too much willpower, we need to start asking questions. Because obviously for certain achievements, we need willpower. But if we need willpower on a day-to-day level, in a way that we're sacrificing on our psychological needs, on our personal values, then it's the short-term mindset. It's as Simon Sinek in his book described, like it's the finite mindset. It's getting to that goal and giving everything, but not looking beyond that goal.
Are you equating willpower in some ways to adrenaline? You know how you need spurts of adrenaline to do certain things, whereas the long haul you can't use adrenaline for that.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually think to operate on a high level, we need to be very aware that we don't operate too much in that adrenaline. And in the psychology and neuroscience, we speak a lot about the window of tolerance. And when we operate within our window of tolerance, that's when we are regulated. That's when we are in our best state, when we make the best decisions, because we have access to our neocortex in the business world called the executive mindset, which allows us to distance ourselves, to not be too reactive, to make better decisions. But what we see in today's society is that a lot of people act out of that window of tolerance, and they call it, it's becoming very technical, they call it the faux window, which basically means that they operate in a functional fight or flight mode, and often it's the fight mode. And I say it's a functional fight mode because we can function in a way. It's not that we tear things down, but we have normalized the functional fight mode. But that's not where we are at our best. Mm-hmm. Because when we're in a fight mode, and just imagine back in the days why we needed this fight mode, is to conquer the animals and the things that were threatening our lives. And when that happened, we had only one focus, that thing right in front of us, or in other words, that goal right in front of us. And we don't have eyes for anything else anymore. So that's why we lose ourselves in the pursuit of our goals.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting, but how do you develop that resilience that moves you away from just using willpower to power through?
A good question. First of all, it requires awareness. So there's the change grid, which is that we, same with grief, with change, we go through certain stages. And the first stage that we're all in, it's human. It's just, it's denial. So in that stage, we're still projecting it. So when we feel tired, it's because of our jobs. It's because of our companies. or it's because of our partner, or it's because of our society. We have all these reasons. It's everything but us. Mm. And so the first part is actually, and then I come back to humility, is like acknowledging that it's you. And from there, we often start this journey of developing more awareness. And that is often in the beginning. First, those are more like passive activities. It's listening to a podcast. It's reading a book. It's maybe joining a workshop. We're not changing ourselves. We're just exploring a little bit outside of our box, which is essential. It's necessary. It's really good. And once we start doing that, we become more aware. We move into resistance because we start to feel that it's really us. And that's what I just described with my client. It's the hard realization. Mm-hmm. Okay, the way I live my life, or the way I lead my business, or the partner I am to the man or woman that I am to my partner, or the father or mother that I am to my children, is not who I really am. Is not who I want to be. Yeah. And that's the hard realization. And from there, they go into exploration. That's the third stage. And exploration is seeking new ways, and it's also developing new skills, because often we throw ourselves in these scenarios because we haven't developed certain skills. There are unfinished developmental tasks.
Yeah.
And that could be the capacity to express ourselves, the capacity to just recognize and acknowledge our needs. It could be the capacity to say no. But yeah, to say no, to set boundaries, we need to know things about ourselves. Like everyone nowadays, especially on Instagram, speaks about boundaries, 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 boundaries. It's amazing to encourage people to set boundaries, but if people don't know who they are, what it is that they need, what their values are, what are the things that are crucial to them for their growth, for their well-being, for their satisfaction. So if they cannot recognize when their values or their needs are being violated, how can they set boundaries? So it all starts with awareness. And there are two levels of awareness. So there's the surface level, the passive activities, which is learning about things. And there's the more active one, it's really going inside. And that's where self-actualization starts, when we stop focusing on the outside and start focusing on the inside.
I think one of the really interesting things, of the many interesting things you're saying, Jordan, is vulnerability and humility. No, you don't hear those words very often. Maybe vulnerability, but not so much humility. Do you find that?
No, well, I'm very hopeful. Let's say that, because I see a lot of great developments.
I think everything we do, though, is trying not to show vulnerability. And as far as humility is concerned, it's trying to be strong and showing strong, because we know that inside we're just these humans that are trying our best, and that's not easy.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm super biased because I get to work with such amazing people in very influential positions. That actually step into vulnerability and into humility. And I see amazing people, psychologists and all other sorts of specialists around the world, is taking that role of really preaching this, or not even, preaching is sometimes not the right word, but it's raising the awareness around it. And I think the transition, like, it's, the past 100 years have been incredible in terms of innovation, economic growth. We're in a bit of a crisis right now, but like, if you just look at it from a bigger perspective, from a higher perspective, it's been amazing for humanity. But at the same time, many well-intelligent people are seeking for new ways more than ever.
Yeah,
because if I speak to my parents and to their generation, it didn't exist in the way that we seek it now. And there's a reason that we seek it. There's a drive in us that wants to grow back into our true nature. Like, somewhere in that, like, exponential growth, we have lost the connection to who we are.
Yeah.
And I think the transition where we are now, like, there's a big group of people, let's say that's the 98% that are into the personal development, self-actualization, is focused on keeping up with the current system. So that's what we see. And that's still perfect. That's all part of the journey. But that's what we see with the Tony Robbins, the Brendan Burchard. It's all about still encouraging to do more, to become more productive, to unleash that power within. But it's still within the same system. It's still that first mountain that people climb up. And that last 2% is people actually really seeking a new way to live their lives, not to keep up anymore.
And your work is to help them find that path?
Yeah, my work is I focus on people that don't want to walk up that first mountain anymore, that really want to do it in a different way. And you say it beautifully, like I don't say this is the path for you. I help them find their own path.
Yeah.
Because it is going from the conventional road into the unconventional road. And the scary thing about it is that we don't know what's next.
Right. In your own journey, your personal journey, Jord, does the work you do help you to progress and learn and develop as a human?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I learn as much from my clients as my clients learn from me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, like, it's just when it was just my personal journey, it was just me. So it wasn't as bad. But getting to work with that many people and understanding the depth of the problems just drives me to understand more of our human nature.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And the more I understand about human nature, the better I can integrate it in my own life, and the better role model I can be for my clients, but also eventually for my children. Because in the end, the reason why I do it is because I want my children and all other children in the world to have healthy role models.
Yeah.
To have role models that move, that still perform, but that move forward from a place of wholeness and authenticity.
Yeah.
And not the other way around, where you first need to achieve something in order mm-hmm. to feel whole, in order to be authentic. Where we can operate from a place of I am enough, I do enough, and I have enough.
I love that. Jord, what's next for you?
What's next for me in business?
Mm-hmm.
So it's beautiful. It's a good question after I just said, I am enough, I do enough, and I have enough. That's really where I'm at. My one-on-one business is thriving. It's like I'm selling out all the time, making lots of impact. And that's what I wish to continue to do. I just signed an agreement with an agency in the UK. We're going to help me with my marketing operations so I can spread the word a little bit more. So what's next is moving from coaching more also in thought leadership. Becoming that role model for other people. What's next else is, it's planned for May, but it's more likely to going to be September, is my expedition in Peru. Where I take 10 of my clients on a 16-day expedition into the mountains. And what I basically want to encourage with those expeditions is for people to step into this journey from a place of joy and inspiration rather than from pain and suffering. Because most clients come to me when it's too late. So I'm now looking to create experiences that encourage people to start that journey a little bit earlier.
That's lovely. And again, I come back to you on that wave with that big smile on your face and how you're sharing that with your clients and with me and with the things that you do. And, you know, I just so appreciate people like you that are brave enough to step out and do these kinds of things.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for chatting with me today, George. Is there anything that you'd like to add before we end and wrap up?
Something I often end with on podcast is forever is gonna or is on their self-improvement, self-actualization journey, personal development journey, whatever we call it. Make sure you do it from a place of self-acceptance. Because what I also see nowadays is that people, it's the endless self-improvement project. And it's, again, it's applying the same system of achieving, but then now on ourselves, which is actually working against you rather than for you.
Yeah.
So if I've inspired you to continue your journey or start your journey, please do it from a place of self-acceptance.
I love that too. If people are looking for you, George, where do they find you?
GeorgeCuiper.com, which is GeorgeCuiper, or on Instagram or LinkedIn, also under the name George Cuiper.
Okay. Thank you for that. And thanks for meeting with me today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So to our listeners and viewers, I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation with George. It is fascinating and it is such a big topic. And for George to take some time to share with us, I really do appreciate. And I appreciate you that you joined me in this podcast journey and in this YouTube journey. And until we meet again, thanks.